Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, it's Janine Vosper here, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. Today, I have with me Mandy Napier. Now, Mandy is a global mindset and performance coach. She is an author, a speaker, and an educator. She's known as the Mindset Alchemist. That's really intriguing, isn't it? I can't wait to find out a little bit more about that. And that means that she specializes in transformational change and works in with high-achieving professionals who desire to reach greater levels of personal satisfaction for themselves professionally and, as I said, personally as well. Now, Mandy is an expert at helping her clients clear their hidden patterns, create lasting behavioral change, and tap into their potential. Now, ultimately becoming the best version of themselves. Welcome, Mandy. That all sounds really interesting. And we cover a lot of these type of subjects on this podcast, and people hear things in a different way. And I'm sure that what you've got to say today is going to really resonate with the audience as well.
Thank you. And it's my pleasure to be here. Looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's that the Mindset Alchemist, where did that come from?
It actually came from a client many years ago. I helped her get rid of it was like a phobia. She had a nightmare frequently, and we cleared it out of her neurology. And her husband actually, first of all, he called me a bit of the spook, and then it became a little bit towards being a magician. And then through that, they went, it's a little bit like being an alchemist. You turn things into gold, because it completely transformed her world when she could let go of this nightmare.
Fantastic. And it's a strong word. I love that word. It really conjures up exactly what you explained then. It's just creating a change and it does become gold. That's beautiful. What got you into it, though? I mean, where did you start? I mean, it's an interesting profession and to be working in.
Yeah, and I think really, without going, making it too long, it really goes back to when I was young. I've always been driven and fascinated with success and what are the clues and what are the answers and why are some people more successful. So anyway, many years later, I got into, I guess, ultra distance sports, and I thought I had the mindset cracked. But as we know, we're always, if we're meant to do something else, we have lessons. So my world came tumbling down, and overnight I had to stop my sports. So that was my catalyst for fixing myself. It was completely selfish. I wanted to get back into sport, and none of the top professionals that I went to see could fix me, because when you're an athlete, you want to get fixed. So anyway, along the way, I went on my own journey of healing and did many, many, many courses and incredibly exciting, varied and interesting things. And one of the short courses I did originally was neuro-linguistic programming, which I had never heard about, but it was during doing an actual process that I got this incredible, literally light bulb moment. And all my trainings and learnings tumbled together, and I went, this stuff works. I had all the books, and I'm sure you've spoken to people that we've got all this information, yet sometimes we need to learn the how-to. And it was like, goodness me, this stuff works. And that was the defining moment that caused me to leave a very good career and establish my business 12 years ago.
Oh, brilliant. And just sort of, checking in a few of those things that you told us, because to be an ultra distance sports person. Now, that's not just, turn up and play a game of baseball on the weekend, is it? Or go for the odd walk like I do each day.
No. I think ultra distance in many ways can be and is for some people a little bit obsessive. However, very briefly, when I was at school, I was very, very sporty. Yet, funnily enough, I used to try and skive athletics because I was a really slow runner and I didn't like coming last. So forward fast many years, when I stumbled into triathlons, I realized I was quite good at the longer distances and I had a lot of endurance and stamina, which made sense because I couldn't sprint to save my life. So I got a little bit hooked on triathlons and, yeah, was got the opportunity to represent Australia over in Nice in France. And my current job was travel, and my aunt happens to live in the south of France, about 2 hours' drive away. So I went, sounds like a great idea. So I was very fortunate that I was sponsored by Qantas to go there. My aunt came and watched me, and off I went. And then from there, I did other big races as well. Mm.
Yes, I mean, that's, you're brushing over that lightly. I mean, you represented Australia as an Iron Woman. I mean, that's pretty significant. Mm. And you know, when people have an illness or an injury or something that takes them away from being able to do what they want to do, it's bad enough, and it does inhibit people in their emotions and in their physical body. But when it takes it away from somebody who has been doing, you know, something at that level, it's got to really throw you.
Mm. Oh, it was at the time, it was devastating. I just to put it in context, I'd done the Australian Ironman Triathlon Championships, which used to be at Foster Tuncurry, and I raced really well. You know, sometimes everything comes together, and I placed third in my age group, which meant I qualified for the Hawaiian Ironman on the lava fields, which is another story. Mm. But about 3 months after Hawaii, my body started to do some really bizarre things. My muscles in my back would start to pull back, and anyway, long story short, nobody quite knew what it was, but my physio thought I'd hurt a disc, and you don't race when you've hurt a disc. So I had to pull out of Gundawindi, which we call the Hell of the West. If there's any triathletes listening, it's a big race in February in Queensland. It's tough. So I had to go.
Oh, February, Queensland, Gundy. That makes a whole lot of sense.
That's why they call it the Hell of the West. It was pretty, it's always pretty hot, but I'd done that probably for the last 4 or 5 years. So I couldn't do it. And then from there, it was like, you've got to stop. And nobody knew what the problem was. My muscles were literally pulling my body, you know, backwards so that I couldn't walk straight. So, yeah, as you say, when you've been getting up every morning and you've been training, to suddenly have that taken away, and that was my big prop. I had a great job, but I just left a very, very unhappy and toxic marriage. So to suddenly be taken away was, it was devastating. But luckily, I've always believed that, you know, if something like that happens, you have to learn from it, find a solution, you know, and go down another path in life rather than sitting feeling really sorry for yourself.
Mm. Well, that's it. You really, there's two decisions, isn't there? There's just either stop or move forward, and it's a heck of a lot more fun to move forward than just to stop.
Yeah.
And I do NLP as well.
Mm.
But so I understand, I know we've talked about it on different podcasts, but somebody might be listening to this for the first time. And you did actually call it its proper name rather than just NLP, which some people do.
Mm.
But can you explain a little bit more? Because, you know, that's a big leap for having the injuries and then going, right, this is working for me, and how did it work, and where did you go from there?
Yeah, well, first of all, because no specialist or allied health professional could help me, the first thing I did, which isn't neuro-linguistic programming, but it has some similarities, I actually went and learnt Hawaiian massage and Hawaiian healing, Huna philosophy, which is like a way of life. And that was
does
very
that include the Lumi Lumi?
Lumi Lumi, yes, it does.
So good.
And the reason I did it, and I'm sure there's other people that might relate to this, the reason I did it is that it meant I had to look at myself. It's quite a lot of spiritual and emotional work, like releasing emotions and getting into your emotions. And it was very hard thing for me to go down to that level. I'm very much a physical, sporty girl, a thinker, a doer, but wasn't really connecting into, you know, that deepest part of my feelings and my emotions and things. So that was my first thing I did, which was hugely healing. And then it was probably a couple of years later that I actually went to a short neuro-linguistic programming course. So neuro-linguistic programming, it's got many definitions, but I like to say it's the study of excellence. It's modeling what works. So it was really founded on the back of psychology, and I'm not knocking it in any way, but the model of psychology has always been that people are broken, we need to fix them. And neuro-linguistic programming is all about success. Everybody has everything they need. We're all amazing people, yet we have behaviors and strategies that don't work. So it's about how we communicate and make sense of the world through our senses. What's going on the inside? What are we thinking? What pictures, what memories, what experiences are going on, and how are we feeling? And all of that creates our behaviors. So if we can change what's going on the inside, put a different picture, a different representation in, we can see, feel, and hear things differently, which means we will see the world in a different way, and therefore we can get a different result. So it's like if you have ingredients for a chocolate cake and you want an orange cake, it has some similarities, but you'll change some of the ingredients and you'll get a completely different end result.
Yeah, that's a very good definition to it, and because people get often get asked exactly what it is, and it's a very nice little concise definition, and I like the analogy with the cakes too. That explains that really well. So, what are you finding? You know, with the clients that you're working with, that what are their main problems and that you're coming across, because it says that, you know, you're working particularly with high achieving professionals. So are they any different than, you know, say people working in their own business with their different problems?
No, you know, fundamentally, and what are high achieving professionals? A lot of the people I work with are business owners. So they might have very successful businesses. And interestingly, everybody has the same type of challenges. They'll be different because we're humans. So one of the biggest challenges at the moment, I guess, is twofold. It's time poor. There's so many more demands, whether you're running your business or you're working for a company, the demands on your time and your expectations and the way you run your business are changing, and people aren't managing it. So somebody in a big company has a lot of pressure from, you know, the people at the top and to make money for the shareholders. So they've got to perform, work harder, change what they're doing, and that's causing immense stress. People who run their own businesses have challenges with, you know, laws of small business, employing people, downturn in economies, technology that they have to spend extra time learning. And I often find that high achievers don't have anyone else to share this with. So they take it all on board. And when you add the other ingredients of a high achiever, which I know very well, and you may be able to relate to this, high achievers put a lot of pressure on themselves to perform, to do well, and they feel like they're not there yet, they could do better, and they're quite hard on themselves, and that creates a lot of internal stress, anxiety, worry. And when we're like that, we tend to let our work-life balance go, or we've got poor habits. So there's that type of presenting problems of habits, behaviours, people getting in their own way at work. They're not doing the things they need to do because they just don't feel free. They feel bogged down in life.
And just is that what we would call a perfectionist sort of mindset as well?
Some, yes. I do have a lot of people who have perfectionism, and unfortunately the perfectionist mindset always leads to inner stress, conflicts and challenges and often anxiety. However, and some of it is, there are also some achievers, like I'm not a perfectionist, and it really just comes from this internal drive to be the very best and feel, because you then model yourself on people who are way, you know, who have achieved way more, it's almost like there's this gap between where you are now and where you want to be. So it doesn't have to be perfect, but there's this gap that you can never quite reach. So some people feel a little bit lonely on the inside, and who do they share this with?
Hmm. Yeah, and just looking, you know, thinking about that with the gap, that I'm just trying to visualize that because I'm quite a visual person, you know, and stepping across that gap to achieve, you know, that what they've set themselves up for, but that without the right tools to get across. I mean, it's not just a matter of, for example, with the triathlon, it's just not a matter of just training harder, is it?
No.
You know, there's a whole lot of components that are going to get you across that gap. But and is there, there's two parts to this. Is there fulfillment when you do get across? And is that enough then? Or is it always something more?
Well, I guess I look at it from where we are now to where we want to go, and the gap is also about enjoying the journey along the way. So it could actually include doing some small tweaks like prioritizing, having a not to do list, and adding in a little bit more fun and a little bit of self-care. So we don't necessarily focus on having to get to the destination. Sometimes it's as simple as clearing the gravel, which is in the way, cleaning the lenses, and so that they can see things differently. Literally taking time to stop and review how they're doing things and what they're doing. Drilling down into what's really important. So I do a lot of work on values, which can be transformational. And sometimes it's as simple as helping people get a little bit more organized in their day with how they manage their time and their priorities, which can be completely transformational as well. And then we might do some work on creating rituals and habits and behaviors that will help them walk towards what they do want, because there's always more. It's like when you climb a mountain range, you know, you get to the top of a peak and you go down, and then you might go up again, and then you go down and up. So there's always going to be more. So we really focus on enjoying that journey along the way, because sometimes their vision of success changes when we work together. They don't want that big thing anymore. They realize it's not what they really wanted.
And that's something that a lot of people miss, isn't it? It's that this is the journey, and just being grateful and appreciating those little things. I go for walks daily, and it's just something simple. Walking back yesterday afternoon, and the sun setting through the trees, and it was just this beautiful golden glow. And because there was clouds in the sky, it has even more impact. And it, you know, just to stop, and I did. I literally stopped and. Looked at it, because it wasn't just the walk and the, you know, keeping healthy and well. It was what's around me while I'm on the walk, and that's part of what we, you know, succeeding in business and succeeding in life and reaching those goals. That's the important part, isn't it? To be able to really recognize those points along the way, no matter how small, that they actually, because we focus on what we don't get rather than what is coming into our lives so much, don't we?
Oh, that is such a big topic. Our brains are, you know, inherently focused on keeping us safe and watching for danger. So they're brilliant at seeing danger, which also includes what isn't working and what we haven't got. So we actually have to work hard and focus on what we do have, hence exactly what you do, which is, it sounds so simple, but it can be so profound. Taking time to appreciate the moment and focus on what we do have, as well as training our mind to think and focus on what we want rather than what we don't want. As you say, it's so common. It's what so many people do, and they don't realize that they're doing it. So that shift in itself can be, you know, can be major. And as you've probably found out with, you know, with high achievers, they sometimes put off looking after themselves because they get so, you know, full on the journey of making the business work and doing things and all the to-do lists. And then they go, oh, when I've done this, I'll go for a walk or I'll look after myself. And then they neglect themselves and sometimes their family. So occasionally we need to gently remind them of the important things in life. And it can be really profound, very simple, but we can only see what we can see at that moment with our lens. And if we're totally focused on business and success, we can forget the simple things in life, yet it's so important.
An important point that you touched on before is about the values. And that's where a lot of people do struggle and they have that conflict and they have dis-ease in their bodies is because they've hit a conflict of values. They may value family, but then they've got this drive to achieve something else. So while the family time is being neglected, it's creating a turmoil within themselves and trying to ensure that they know what are they in first instance, know what their highest values are, and then ensuring that what they're doing isn't in conflict with them as well.
Mm. Yeah, and you're so right. Look, values are so important. I work, a lot with values, and it's really interesting. Quite a few people think that they know what their values are. So they've got a little bit of conflict and turmoil. And when we have conflict and turmoil, which equals stress, one day it will manifest as dis-ease or illness or something, panic attacks in your body. I know because I've lived it. So when we can actually work out what's important, because we'll always have time to focus on what's important. So when people explain what their values are and why they're important, they've often never verbalized it or written it down. They can see things differently. And when they realize what's truly important, it's incredible how they can adjust, whether it's their daily routine, what they do, and align them with their goals. It's almost like you take the handbrake off in life and you move forward with more flow and grace and energy and ease. And I've, seen so many transformations, one in particular.
That's a great point, isn't it? And again, a visualization of take the handbrake off. Yeah. Because it does. It holds us back when we're not working for our greatest good. Mm. And checking in to our subconscious to find out what our greatest good is an important factor as well.
Mm. Mm. And, the subconscious, my favourite topic, obviously, or area to work. So if it's okay, I might just give a really, really quick couple of points because it is so important. You know, most people don't have any idea how their mind works. They don't believe they're in charge of it because we're not taught about these topics at school. So we have two parts to the mind, and it's the subconscious mind, which is actually in our body, which is a million times more powerful than our conscious mind. It's awake 24/7. It's where our habits are stored. And as we run our day, about 50% on autopilot in habits, it means we're running our day out of awareness. We're not really aware of what we're doing. And our thoughts become habitual too. Yet all learning, behavior, and change takes place at the subconscious level. So unless we give ourselves clear instructions and we understand how to program our subconscious mind so that it's going in the same direction as our conscious mind that says, hey, I'm going to go to the gym this week and I'm going to do this today, and then we don't. So unless we learn how to program it with tools and techniques and strategies, most people will never, ever achieve the level of success as defined by them, that they want. So I guess values are one of the lenses we view the world through, which are also deep down in our hidden mind or our subconscious mind. So when we can reveal what's in the subconscious mind, we can then become aware of it. And becoming aware is the first step to making any change. And, some of our beliefs that we run in particular are so deep that people don't even know they're there because they're so hidden or so obvious that we can't see them in the way that we need to be able to shift them. So we just carry on doing the same thing, and running on autopilot. Whereas when we focus on changing and looking deep within ourselves, that's where the keys to transformations begin.
Yeah, that it is that level of awareness. And that's something that, and you said that, a lot of people just aren't aware that they are in control of their own mind and in control of their choices. People just seem that what is happening around them, they just have to not just flow with it, that's not the right word, they just have to accept it because that's just the way it is, without recognizing that they can step back, look in and go, okay, where do I go from here, and how do I change this result that I've been getting all this time? But a lot of people just don't know that that's a possibility. And
no.
That's exciting, isn't it, when you work with somebody and they go, oh, didn't know that.
Yeah.
And change.
Yeah, and I think going back, that the thing is, people tend to, you know, I often get people coming to me because they've hit that roadblock. You know, they realize that they've got these problems that they don't know how to fix. Occasionally, I get people that are totally committed to being the very best version of themselves, which is just awesome, but they are the minority. Most people that come and seek me out have got a problem. You know, it's presenting in their life as they're not doing what they need to do in their business. They're procrastinating, or they're self-medicating with too much drinking or eating, or they're not giving themselves time off, or they're highly stressed and they're not sleeping. So it's the presenting problem, and then they'll come to me, and that's when the exciting journey begins. Yet most people don't actually back themselves and go, okay, I've got a problem here, I need help. And I guess I understand how hard that first step is, because that was something I had to learn many years ago, that I couldn't fix myself on my own, and I needed to be brave and ask for help, because we just can't see ourselves through the same lens as other people. Because we do get in our own way as humans, don't we, Janine?
Oh, absolutely. And that recognition is, I mean, they start it with the Alcoholics Anonymous and the different programs, and that is recognizing that there is a problem now. Not necessarily as severe as that, but it's certainly, you know, things that are affecting the joy of living on a day-to-day basis is to say there is a problem, and then seeking out a way and making a decision to change it. That's the other thing. You can seek out help, but unless you make a decision to change it, then it's not going to help. No, you're not going to get the results you want.
No. And the other major interesting dilemma that so many humans have, Janine, is that when people are faced with that help, or they start talking about it, and I've seen people in my office do this, because we're hardwired to be kept safe and comfortable, our body automatically releases chemicals. There's about to be danger because you're going to change, and our identity wants to keep us safe and comfortable where we are. So therefore, most people interpret these chemicals, which are feelings, as fear and doubt, and then that the good old head gets in the way and starts to justify why, oh, maybe I can't do this. Maybe I'll wait for the right time. Maybe it won't work for me, or whatever it is. And that's why so many people never back themselves, because they let their fear stop them. But it's a natural thing to happen to humans. So when they understand that, hey, this is just a natural occurrence in my body because my brain wants to keep me safe, and they can step through that, that's when the magic and the journey happens. But so many people don't realize it's just an innate part of us to keep us safe, and then they don't change because they feel fearful, which is such a shame.
I know. I ran a workshop the other day, and we were talking about the comfort zone, and my definition of a comfort zone is an anxiety of confinement. There's nothing comfortable about a comfort zone.
It's a nice one.
Yeah, well, there isn't anything, because you don't step out of it. It's not comfortable because you don't step out. But it's and I said to, you know, the people in the workshop, my job today is to make you uncomfortable. And they were. So I achieved my result of my agenda. I said, there's no growth unless you're uncomfortable doing things today, because it was a sales workshop. It was on different selling. Or being authentic in the sales process, but stepping out and doing things that you don't want to do. But the more you do it, it's like, you know, I love roller coasters, absolutely love roller coasters and things that go fast. Sometimes, you know, I'm just thinking about this year, because I know when the recordings will come up later, because we're actually recording this in May, and it won't be out till September. But my 60th birthday is next week in May.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, yes, and you know, there's certain things when I've always done the fast water slides or the roller coasters and those sort of things that I've always done. And now when I go to do them, I think, is that really necessary anymore? And that little fear thing that you said just sort of steps in there just for a second. And I go, no, I really enjoy these things still. Just push through it. And you do get that, you know, that tightness in the gut, when you push through it, the fun and enjoyment and the opportunities on the other side of that feeling, it means you just don't miss out on stuff. You know, you can live life to the greatest opportunity there is, but we all get it, but the more you push, the less you get it, and the more chances that and it's not as many things affect you. You just go, oh, yeah, I can do that. Not a problem.
Yeah. And it's interesting, though. I've experienced this myself, and I do believe this can happen. I hate to say this, but I'm going to. When we get older, we have to push harder because it seems to be that we get this clasp on this innateness within us that we want to be kept safe and comfortable. And some of the things I used to do, I used to be a really big adventurer. I think, if I think about doing them again, I get this little, you know, more intrepidation than I did. So it's very important that every day we challenge ourselves. And in case there are people listening who don't like physical challenges and sports, which are always the best, we don't have to do that. If we even do something different every day in our routine, which could be as simple as cleaning our teeth with our left hand instead of our right hand, changing our routine throughout the day, we're actually challenging our brain a little bit because it's working differently. And even small changes like that in our life can help us keep out of our comfort zone and not fall back into, you know, running by habits and running on autopilot. So might be helpful if there's anyone out there that doesn't like physical. I'm not big on roller coasters. I've been on them, but they actually make me feel a bit sick and nauseous. And I tweaked my neck when I went on one down at, I think it was SeaWorld. I took my neck there a couple of
times. It's a pretty old one, that one there. Yeah. I remember about when I was about 50-something, my parents had got some tickets to SeaWorld. And so I went with them there for the day. And here they were, my parents in their 70s, standing and waiting for their daughter in the 50s to get off the roller coaster after a couple of rides. Okay, just one more. Let's just go one more.
Yeah, you see, once you do it, it gets a bit addictive. Once you've got through that fear, you then get the adrenaline rush and you go, oh, I must do this again.
it's great. Actually, we're at Dreamworld the other day, and there's the giant drop. For those that haven't been to the Southeast Queensland theme park of Dreamworld, it just takes you up and then drops you, basically.
Oh, that's right. That's it.
The Tower of Terror. And it's a giant drop. The Tower of Terror is good as well. Drop. Yeah, it goes backwards
too far. Oh, I've done that.
And we had the grandkids in at the Whitewater World, and one of the grandchildren is 15, and my son in his mid-30s, and myself, we skipped out on the kids and the little ones and left their mum there and my husband, and we raced over into Dreamworld and went on all these rides, and there was nobody there, so we just sort of kept going, repeat, jump over the fence, repeat.
I have fun.
It's that there is that fear factor, and we all get it. And even for, you know, when you're jumping over the fence and doing something again that you've done before, there's still sometimes something there that goes, no, go do it. And it's getting through that, and that's why the comfort zone isn't a comfort zone for me. You just got to keep pushing out all of those boundaries all of the time. And
sure.
And expanding what becomes your reality on what you're capable of as well, because when you know you're capable of a whole lot more things, you know, gosh, you know, went on a roller coaster, you can take on other things, can't you? Not associated.
Look, taking action and challenging ourselves, just, you know, you love your rides, and that is the best thing to build our confidence. And lots of people, you know, need to boost their confidence in many ways. And they often ask me, how can I? And sure, I have techniques that you can practice and mentally rehearse and, you know, change the way you feel. Yet ultimately, the best way to build your confidence, because it's linked to how you feel, your personal power, is to go forth and take action. And I guess that's, you know, as I look back over the years, I did some crazy things like hitchhiking through Africa on my own, which I would never dream of now, and I climb mountain ranges. But when you do it, it really does build your confidence and self-belief. So I wasn't silly when I hitched through Africa on my own. I wasn't, you know, stupid. I was really careful, and I was even more intuitive about the rides I took, because that sense of self was so big because of the physical challenges and the adventures and the way I pushed myself, that I had quite a big self-belief that I would be okay, because I felt I had this worldliness and a rock-solid confidence, if that makes sense.
Mm. Mm. No, I totally agree. I am heading off, or I will be returned by the time this is live, on a 10-week holiday to Europe, and have booked nearly everything through Airbnb and just sort of done a bit of discovery in different areas. And I've got other friends that are meeting us there for a short period of time on a cruise, but then they head off on organized tours, which is not my personal thing. But the main reason that they're doing that is because of fear of what might happen if they didn't do it that way.
So it does
limit opportunities. You know, that's one of the reasons a lot of the tour companies are so successful, is because, I mean, other than offering a great opportunity on a tour and you get things explained to you, but if you didn't have the backing of the tour company and were doing it yourself, then there's fear that something will go wrong.
You don't have to think so much. And sometimes people, you know, in this busy, awful word, but this virus of busyness we live in, it's almost like people get exhausted and they want a holiday, but they go, oh, let's go and be looked after, because it gives them a chance to unwind and not think. However, you will be glad to hear this. I used to be in travel many years ago, and I do know that one of the biggest growing segments of travel is older people doing more adventurous things like overland trips. It's a really big growing market because we're living longer. So that's pretty exciting, but there's still a lot of people that do the
Living longer and living better, which is great. And that's awesome to hear those results. You mentioned something early on, and I just love it, a not-to-do list. Oh, my gosh, I'm going to start writing my not-to-do list today. It's incredible. What sort of things do you have on your not-to-do list?
Oh, currently, I haven't done one this week, but I have before. So I teach people, first of all, you write down all the things you have to do, and we often do, you know, when we've done values, and it's right, prioritize them. So what I would have on my not-to-do list is not to waste time, which I actually don't do, on social media or reading interesting information. So I sometimes cross out that, and I schedule time, and I actually ask myself, if I'm working on my business, is this interesting or is this income generating? So that helps me. I have questions that I ask that helps me prioritize things. But there's a great little technique, which, if it's okay, I share, that can help people prioritize, because sometimes people find it very difficult to cross things off a list. So you get a piece of paper and you divide it into three. And on the left side is an absolutely yes. In the middle is a maybe. And on the right is a no, or no, not now. And you have a list of everything to do. So you make a decision as to, yes, what are the things you really do need to do that are really important? And then you've made a clear decision. Now, the things that we have in life which are maybes, which are often on the to-do list, actually waste energy and cause decision fatigue, because we haven't made a clear decision as to whether we're going to do them. So if you can clean your maybes and go, yes, I'm going to do that, and then schedule it into your diary, you freed up a lot of RAM in your brain. And if you then have something you're not sure about, it might be a project that you're working on or a social commitment you haven't committed to, you then go yes or no, and then you can go no, not now. So your brain feels okay that you're not losing it forever by saying no. So you give yourself permission to say no, not now. So by making a decision, no, not now, or yes, you clean out all these maybes which waste your energy, and then you have more direction and clarity to focus on the things that are really important, and your not to-do list can include things on your no, not now list. So that's my longer version of a not to-do list, which is a better methodology for helping people get going. And it's wonderful. It frees up all this space in your brain, and the energy of the mind is attention. So what you focus on is where your energy goes. So by making clear decisions, you have more energy to focus on the things that are important, which ultimately means you'll get them done quicker, and then you can go and have more time for fun, like playing on the rides.
Yeah, or well, 10 weeks in Europe. There we go.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's a key thing, you know, to get
absolutely
things done.
Yeah, no, that's great. It's and I vaguely remember hearing something like this, but not for a long time. And, you know, different people have different ways of doing things. But I really like that no, not now as well, because sometimes there's things that we just can't let go of. You know, we just go, yeah. I really think that that's going to be important, but it never hits the top of the list. It's never the main priority. But having it on a no, not now, it's going
it's
to
safe.
Be.
Otherwise, our brain freaks out because, you know, it's like people that go on diets, it's deprivation. If I can't ever have this again, or if I say no, then our sort of inner monsters freak out and sabotage it. So by having it as a no, not now, we feel safe. And I also have a list that I have a one day maybe. And when I have an idea about a place I might want to travel to, or something, another sport I might want to try, or stand up paddling or whatever, I put it on there so that I know it's safe. And then every now and again, I look at it. So, you know, it's stored out of my head. So I don't wake up in the middle of the night suddenly thinking about things, and we know that it's safe, and therefore we can function better.
Getting it out of our head, that's the important factor, isn't it? I'm big on lists. So you just go, once it's on a list and it's out, it's done. And I'm currently writing a list for house sitters as to different things, you know, and just, and I think of things, and we've got this fabulous drink fridge out in our back area, but you just got to kick the bottom to make sure it's closed. And so I even added that to the list today. But it's just something I thought, well, I'll just put on the list, because the list is permanent then. It can be for every lot of house as we get through. But it's all, and it's, I'm sure that they're little things that they'll appreciate knowing as well, you know, and how, because, but it's out of my head now. I don't have to think about that again. It's done.
And that is such a brilliant thing to do. It almost brings this whole new conversation up about how do we claw back our time in our life and free up our headspace. And one of it is twofold. A, by writing it down, we activate different neural pathways, and it's been proven that writing things down improves our concentration, memory, and learning. And then you've done the most incredible thing by writing down that simple instruction of pushing the fridge. A, it will cause a lot of not angst to the people if they don't know how to close it, but if we can systemize things and it simplifies our life, so we don't have to keep thinking about where did we put things or how do we do this. So it's simple, but it is profound. And imagine when you have, as you say, everything written down, organized and systemized, you take it to the next person. And if we could put a little bit of that into our lives, our businesses and our days, it would save time, stress, and angst. And it's something I teach on, you know, a new blueprint for success in my program, Get Breakthrough Results. And so many people don't have any systems and structures. So writing it down, getting it out of your head, and systemizing it is brilliant. Simple, but so brilliant.
Yeah, systems is one of the ways, especially when you're in a micro business and you're trying to do everything yourself, then having a system for things is definitely one of the ways that you can free up, as you said, the mindset and the time, of course, as well. And anything you do more than once, you really should have a system for it. And that way, if you need to get a PA or a VA, then you can just pass on the information as well, can't you?
And sometimes we need help. I'll just frame this up. Systems and organization were never my forte, because we all have different skills. So I always say to people, look, find a system, and if not, get some help. But there are some great ones out there, and some people are better organizers. So I find someone who's a great organizer and get them to help me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's And I've interviewed one of the ladies on a previous interview, and that's what she does. She creates systems. And her name is just skipped me, but people have to go looking for it to find it. And I know her well too. That's her thing. She does love systems and just, that's her suggestion is spend 15 minutes a day out of your business to something that you've done through the day to create a system for it if you've done it more than once. And it was just simple. That 15 minutes will save hours later on.
The challenge is getting people to do it. Like something I always, with my clients, we have daily rituals and systems for the start and the end of the day, you know, your bookmarks. And some people that aren't planners, because planning is really important too, you know, have to find a way to discipline themselves. I say write a sticky on your desk, put a reminder, any way that you need to do to remind yourself to do the thing that you're learning, otherwise you'll forget. And people that aren't planners have to be quite disciplined and need a little bit of prodding and assistance to kickstart that new habit.
I totally agree. Takeaway points, Mandy. And I know they're a little bit different than some of the things that we've discussed, which is great, because often it's just repeated, which is always good as well. But it's
it all morphs together, but I guess, you know, as we said, I work with a lot of high achievers and people that don't think they're high achievers. I guarantee they are. So for anybody out there, whether you're a business owner, a mother, a parent, whatever profession you're in, the one biggest thing I see every day is people being hard on themselves and berating themselves and beating themselves up. Now, I think I noticed that because I used to have a gold medal in that, and it's one of the reasons that my body fell apart, because when I discovered why this happened, I realized I created it, but my toxic thoughts and being very hard on myself and living in not a happy marriage at that time meant that and being an overthinker, and our body is 70% water, and my toxic thoughts got hooked up in my muscles, my body broke down. So I'm so pedantic. If I had a dollar for every person who is hard on themselves, and I keep having to remind, I'd have a whole desk full of piggy banks. So being kind to self, and that's as simple as you have to be aware of what you're saying and thinking, because most of it you're not aware of. So when you hear yourself being hard on yourself, you don't have an argument with it and make it worse. You simply become aware. Then as you become aware, you just perhaps go delete, delete, and you must replace that space with something else. And that's where I call them posts, positive statements or mantras are important. You simply put something else in. Every day I am becoming kinder to myself, something that's believable and gentle. And eventually, if you do that enough, you will put in a new program, and one day you will wake up and you'll be kind and gentle to yourself, and your whole world will change, I guarantee.
Yeah, that's important, isn't it?
So that's my first one.
Absolutely. And I know you advocate for people taking care of themselves.
Yes, it's such an interesting one. Many years ago, I used to think that I was really selfish because I was an adventurer and a traveler, and I didn't want to, you know, get stuck in one place. And I think for women in particular, women often, you know, they're the primary caregivers most of the time, nurturers. They don't put themselves first, yet, you know, that old cliche of whose oxygen mask goes on first on an aeroplane, well, it has to be yours. If you don't take time for yourself and honor that you're an energy being and replenish your energy, how can you ever have any energy for the people that you care about, then the people that you work with and come across with, and then everybody else? So it's selfless to take care of yourself, not selfish. And it's so important. Otherwise, we get stressed, we get resentful that we're not doing things that give us fun. And, you know, that includes fun, which you were talking about earlier, is so important.
Totally agree with that one. It's something that I speak on often is that particular topic. And your third point?
Committing to personal growth. Now, this is my thing. It's been my thing all my life, but it's in this day and age, I think it is even more important that people look at themselves. We can't change so much of what's happening in the world. There's so much change that people are getting fearful and scared and precious, et cetera, et cetera. The answer is to look within, because that is the key to managing change, embracing it, whether it's reinventing yourself or just, you know, rebuilding your business or becoming that new person. You can only do it if you look within yourself. It's like you have to upgrade and change that software, because 20 years old software doesn't work today. When you know who you are, what you stand for, what is important, you can say no to many of the distractions that are out there every day, and you're not living someone else's life and feeling obligations. You just feel more empowered, and it opens so many doors, and you can see the world and things that are all around you that you could never see before. So there are opportunities, and it's the best thing I ever did so many years ago was go on a journey, and I'm sure you're the same. Opened up a world I didn't know existed.
Absolutely. I've been working on professional and personal development, well, since in my 20s or even younger than that. Actually, I think that's I mentioned this on one of the podcasts the other day. The first professional development course I did was to learn to type. I had done academic subjects at schools. So I learned to type, and I was only 17 and in the workforce. And that was probably one of the best skills I ever learned, because it's certainly helpful now. That's just the start. That was just purely the start, and recognizing you can learn more. Yeah, that's a great takeaway point that's highly valuable to people. Yeah. And how can people get in touch with you, Mandy?
Oh, okay. They can look me up online. My website is www.mindsetforsuccess.com.au, or you can put my name in, Mandy Napier. I come up there quite prevalent. I'm on the usual social medias, Facebook, LinkedIn. I have a YouTube channel, which is Mandy Napier. And then there's some quite a lot of free resources on my website. There's a free ebook that they'll find, and
that's always good. A free ebook too. I looked at that. That's your Winning Mindset, the copy of that.
Just got some simple tools. So simple, yet the really foundations of simple techniques, so you can understand your mind and start to harness the powers of your subconscious and take charge of it, because the mind's a muscle and it needs disciplining. So it's a starting point for understanding and learning about your mind, and finding a few techniques to increase people's success.
And they'll find your contact details on mindsetforsuccess.com.au, but they can email you at Mandy at mindsetforsuccess.com.au as well, can't they?
They can. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. And if there's anyone in Australia, hey, I'm really into connections, and you know, all my clients, usually I have a really great relationship with. I'm happy if you want to ask me any questions. If you're game enough, you can pick up that telephone, 0408 666 176. If I'm around, I'll speak to you, and if I'm not, I'll get back to you. It'll be my pleasure to do that too, in this impersonal way. I'm very much into personal connections.
So am I. A phone conversation or a face-to-face conversation is, and I had somebody this morning that was wanting some information, and that's what I said, look, just here's a link to book some time, just 20 minutes, and we have a chat. I know that you do the same sort of thing as well, because you really want to know how you can help somebody before you just sort of start setting up things for them, because you want the best outcome for them as well.
It's so important. And I always have a talk to a client, no obligation, because we need to be a good fit. You know, it has to work for me too. And I do what I do to help the person get their results. It's the only reason. And it's very important. And they need to feel safe with the person that they're going to work with and invest time and money. I really get that. It's very important.
Look, thank you, Mandy. I really appreciate your time. Such great value, and you know, an opportunity for people to think about thinking differently. I think that's one way to look at it as well. And all those really good tools that you've shared as well. Thank you for your time this morning.
That's my pleasure. It's been great talking to you. And as you said, wow, the time's zipped by. So thank you very much, Janine.
You must have a great holiday. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Or it'll be back by the time. It's bizarre, isn't it? But anyway, I'm quite happy to talk both ways. It's fun. Mm. That's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. And I'm Janine Vosper, your host. And remember that you can go to my website, janinevosper.com, and download free ebook on just overcoming barriers to success. And or else book, and as mentioned, schedule some time with me and we can have a chat and just see whether there's something that I can assist you with. And please leave a 5-star review at the end when you're listening to the podcast. It's really helpful when you do that. Or send me an email and give me some feedback as to what you've enjoyed about the episode and what you found that you've got out of it yourself, because that's important to know that, you know, that we're changing people's lives, and the fabulous guests that I have on, like Mandy, that we've able to make a difference in your life. But thank you for joining me, and I will be back with you on the next episode of the We Are Women podcast. And bye for now.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the 5 most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.